Can I stand up or is that okay?
Yes, please. We can't hear you otherwise.
Okay. So, Migrant Media, which is a collective of activists and filmmakers that made this film, started in the late 80s. And the idea we had was to make films about our communities. And when I say our communities, Migrant Media was a very cool collective of refugees, migrants, immigrants, people who came from a colonial or imperial, anti-imperialist background that were wanting to make images about our communities because the images that we've been made didn't represent us. And we didn't want to make films about victims. We wanted to make films about the resistance to those victims, the resistance by the families and by the communities. And so this is one of those films. And in terms of, in relation to archive, we didn't want to make films or make products for television or anybody else, in fact. We were out there to document what was happening in our community, so we spent a lot of time just filming and filming and filming and following what's happening, and people would call us up and we'd go and we'd be part of the campaigns and part of those struggles. And it, at certain points in our history, we would say it's time to do something about this issue or that issue. And at that time, we would decide to make an intervention at a national level with the groups who were organizing and fighting at that time. So with this film, which was commissioned by Channel 4, at a time when it was doing some reasonable work, was really, grew out of some of the other work we've been doing. And what we did with this film was to, we were working with Corazai, which was the organization of Zairean refugees, and the Algerian Community Center. And both those groups had very strong community organizations which were working across all kinds of areas, not just in terms of deportation, but a whole range of issues, and not just here. The struggles back in Zaire, the struggles back in Algeria were part of that. And so the film grew out of us working with mainly those two communities and other people who are involved, other organizations like JCWI and West Midlands Anti-Deportation Campaign, and I can't remember the others. It seems like yesterday, but it was a long time ago as well. And we had a meeting in somebody's bedroom in Finsbury Park, and we all thought, well, what do we need to do? So we said, okay, well, we'll get the commission from Channel 4, and we got that commission. And then it was agreed that there would be a hunger strike. So the two community organizations phoned all the people that were inside all the prisons and the detention centers, Campsfield and Penfield and everywhere else. And it was agreed at a certain date to that a hunger strike would start. Good timing. And then we would do the press work for the hunger strikers whilst making the film. So the hunger strikers would basically say, we're going to do this, or we're going to do this protest. And if you watch the film, you'll see how it escalates and builds into a very strong resistance movement by the refugees and the asylum seekers in prison, supported by campaign groups outside. But they were still leading, obviously leading from inside and from the community organizations outside. And as the months went on, certain issues came up that we should mention. I think it was the Refugee Council, British Refugee Council, or the Refugee Legal Center, which told some of the detainees they wouldn't represent them anymore if they went on hunger strike. Mm-hmm. So there are these kind of issues that were going on there, which I'm sure are still around today. So there was a kind of liberal backlash to try and dissuade people from taking control of their own situation, I would say. But that was really not that big an issue, but worth discussing, I think, in terms of organizing and campaigning. Because when we talk about the state, we have to be, I think, very broad of what we mean by that. And anyway, this went on and on. While making the film, we decided we'd have to take direct action. There were certain cases that came up. We knew that people wouldn't be able to get released, so we released them ourselves through all kinds of means. Got people out of council. At that stage, it was quite easy to spring people over the fence. I don't know what it's like now. So we did that a few times and had people hidden in the back of our car. I remember we were stopped a few times as well by the police. But because we were working for Channel 4, they didn't bother to check the boots. So we have to thank Channel 4 for that at least. And then eventually what happened was the hunger strike escalated. Two people nearly lost their lives. But in the end, Charles Wardle, the immigration minister, when questioned by Diane Abbott, really put his foot down and said, we're not going to do anything about this, we're not going to release anybody, these people are bogus, and if you watch the film. There's a lot more detail. Eventually, after, I think, a few weeks of this going on, I think we had about 350, something like that, asylum seekers were released from prison in one go. Which completely destroyed the argument by the government that these were all bogus and shouldn't be used. But when the film went out on Channel 4, they had to do something, so they did that. It was a small victory, but it was a victory nevertheless. And I think the situation, from our point of view, is how to escalate that and how to make that. I know that hunger strikes have happened again. I know places have gone on fire. I know more people have died. I know more people have fought. But looking from the outside, I would say now, I don't see a national resistance movement from inside being supported by outside. I don't know, if I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong. But that's what I would say needs to happen.
Certainly have been supporting lots of women who are in detention, who are in fear of deportation, and certain parts of thinking about like the hunger strikes that have been happening more recently and were happening last year, were really, really important in doing that support work.
Hi everyone. My voice is very low, so tell me if you can't hear me. Can you hear me, Anne?
Yeah.
Probably I'm wondering why am I speaking for the All African Women's Group. I'm an asylum seeker myself, and the group started in 2003, and it was an Eritrean women's group, and over the years other women joined and it became the All African Women's Group. And at the moment we've got women from different countries, like me, myself, I'm from East Europe, we've got women from Mexico, the Caribbean, Middle East, different countries. And I joined the group 4 years ago. I knew that when my mum was asked by a friend to join the group, I said to my mum, well, it's called the All African Women's Group, so I don't know if they will accept us. And I went along with my mum, and we were very welcome, so I stayed. And we do a lot of campaigning. We also work on each other's cases, on our own cases and each other's cases collectively. Many of our members have been in detention, and some of our members have also been involved in the hunger strikes that have been going on over the years. We usually speak publicly about what we go through in the asylum process. And because the members of our group change constantly, new members come in, and all members who, women who win their case, they go on to get on with their life. Some of them stay to help other women as well. So we have to rely on the old members to tell us the history of our group, what has been done over the years. And we do try to archive what we have achieved and what we have published over the years, but sometimes it's it's hard because it's, we can't make it public because it's about our own personal stories and our own cases. And I just wanted to say, the whole immigration system is made, is designed on that way, that to make us fail and to make us, to force us to get deported. And first of all, we have to fight with our lawyers and then the office. And women from our group resist this a lot. Like one of the women, she told us in our meeting how she, when she went to sign, they wanted to take her to detention. So she had to lie on the floor and refuse, say too long of, to the immigration officer, you won't be taking me to detention today. So she wasn't taken to detention. And with the hunger strikes as well in, inside detention, women resist how they are treated by the office and try to get together and help each other to resist deportation. For example, they when some they tell us they share their stories when they get released and come to join our group. Sometimes when they hear there is a chartered flight, they gather together and to try not to let those women to get deported. And when whenever we have appeal hearings, we go to each other's appeal hearings and the room, the courtroom gets packed just to try and be there and tell the judge to be careful on what decision they make. And we also have, we have supported the hunger strikes. We've been directly in touch every time there's been an hunger strike. We've been directly in touch with the women who are on hunger strike and try to support them by calling them every day and giving them information, and as well as try to get publicity, media coverage of what's going on, and also making sure that their demands are not changed, because sometimes what happens is that some people make their own demands, decide what we want as asylum seekers, and we try that those demands stay the same as the demands of the women who are inside. And I think all this resistance has made us stronger and hopeful and made us to want to carry on. Because as you mentioned in your film and as you mentioned when you spoke, all the hunger strikes have resulted in people being released from detention. Every single hunger strike has resulted in that. And we know that when we stand up to the Home Office, to immigration officers, we know that whenever we go to a court hearing and be there, we win our cases. And I watched your film last night. I was really, really depressed after watching the film because I said to myself, this film is made when I was born and nothing has changed. Like, the same things are happening now. There's hunger strikes, there's people forcibly removed, people have died again, like Jimmy Mbenge. And I said to myself, nothing has changed, but then I had time to think and reflect. And I said, maybe I'm wrong, it's not like that, because a lot of things are happening, a lot of people's lives are being saved, like what the Stansted 15 did, they saved many lives. And other people, there is support for asylum seekers, and every time a deportation is stopped, someone's life is saved. And I know it's not easy because the government is trying to criminalize us and to make us to oppress us, but we have to keep on fighting because we are actually winning. Like every time in our meetings we get women who have won their case, which is very uplifting for us. Yeah. Thank you.
Melissa, who's one of the coordinators at SOAS Detainee Support.
Hi everyone. Yeah, I'm one of the coordinators for SOAS Detainee Support. Our name is a bit misleading because actually our only relationship to SOAS is that we have meetings there. But that's our name for now. So we are a group that supports people in immigration detention through what we call political friendships, for lack of a better term. So what we do is we get referrals from people in detention, either through word of mouth, so people call us on the SDS phone, or through other organizations, or through like friends of people who are inside detention, and we match them up with visitors and volunteers to support them in whatever it is that they need, basically. So often that is just visiting and like having a connection on the outside and having somebody who goes and visits you once a week regularly. And sometimes that's support, increasingly so, that is support with casework. So support with like, well, we can't give legal advice because we're not lawyers and that's illegal. But like things like chasing up lawyers, helping gather evidence for asylum claims or Article 8 claims, etc. Chasing up lawyers, again, because they're just really shit most of the time. So that's what we do, like that's our main sort of purpose as a group. We have also been involved through the years. I've only been involved with SDS for a year, but SDS as a group has existed for over 10 years, I would say. So a while, and throughout that time we have been involved in things like campaigns or protests. Most recently we were quite heavily involved in the last Gaza hunger strike, mostly getting people's voices out. When you're in detention, probably as everybody already knows, you're extremely isolated, and as a group we were very lucky to have contacts with the media and like lots of people who were just willing to dedicate time into getting the voices out. We also run a project called Detained Voices, which is a blog where people who have experienced detention or the asylum/refugee system, can just write about their experiences. And we often, what we do is we just call people on the phone and write down everything they say and put it straight on the blog just as it is. And during the hunger strike, that was really, really active because there was hundreds of women striking, and not all of them were making it to the media. In terms of archiving, it's a tricky one. I mentioned it very, very briefly earlier today because, like, as the coordinator for SDS, I speak to people in detention a lot, like, almost every day, and I hear all of these stories. But, A, there's the confidentiality aspect of it, because obviously I'm not going to go out and tell people's stories. But even if there wasn't that, it's, I think the problem with SDS and archiving is the urgency of things. People usually reach us when they have removal orders. So we have like a month to kind of get that solved. Which means we're not focused on archiving our stories, we're not focused on being like, look at all the great work we're doing. And even when people do get released, which happens relatively often, thankfully, we're not focused on that, we're focused on moving on to supporting the next person or making sure that the person who was released has housing or continues to have a solicitor, etc. So we're not focused on doing that, and I think because of that, I watch documentaries like this one, and just like you were saying, I feel depressed because I'm like, fuck, nothing has changed. Like, people can still, immigration officers can still detain because they want to, there's still indefinite detention, the detention state is shrinking, tentatively, but like not that much. And so I'm like, oh god, that is really depressing. And that happens because we're not recording our wins, I think. We're not recording anything. We're not recording the things that go wrong, but we're also definitely not recording the things that go right. And so this is something that like, and I think this is something that I found when I joined SDS, I had like a massive gap of like historical knowledge of what has happened before that. Like, I learned so many things just from being here today, and I consider myself somebody who's quite involved in all of this, and I still don't know what we did, but I struggle to like find the balance between doing the work and living the work or living the experiences and recording it and looking back and kind of being able. question that I struggle with a lot of how do you do the work and record the work at the same time, basically. Yeah. Oh, and anybody can get involved in SDS, come talk to me.
Final reflections for anyone in the room, any questions you have for people here, and then we are going to wrap it up, babe. Anybody? Gavin?
I have a question for Ken. I'm just wondering if you, are you working on anything at the moment related to migrant justice movements?
Well, if you go onto the site, it's, we're on Vimeo, it's Migrant Media. We've done a lot, most of the work has been around police murders, deaths in police custody, and so we've done a lot of work around that issue. We are. I can't be that public about it, because it's this whole point, and I see where you're coming from. We didn't set off to archive, we set off to struggle and to resist. But the important thing, and as you say, if somebody doesn't keep it somehow, it's not about putting it out straight away, it's about making sure that it exists somewhere.
I just had a really quick reflection on that, that I think there's often a feeling from lots of people that you can only be involved if you're doing a very like frontline thing that is connected with people directly, and actually like that's really something that we can be taking to our networks, is like, actually there's loads of different jobs and they're all really, really useful, and it doesn't mean you have to be doing something that requires you to be able to do it all day, every day, or, you know, whatever it is. There are like different ways that you can support, and maybe we will do well in our collective to think about like, what are the different ways in which we can like help to get that information to other people who might be able to archive it for us, or given we've got time, you know, like, maybe there's some more granny things on, like, we'd love to get to know our scale really well and like do that.
I mean, from my point of view, the testimonies of people, whether they're audio or film, are really important for the future. So whilst, I mean, all the people talk about archiving, they think about photos or papers or documents. I think it's about that experience and recording that, you know, and making sure that's there, and making sure people know it's there. Because in the future, that's the history that people get access to. This is it's a 15-minute film. We probably shot, you know, fucking months of stuff, and we have that stuff, and that archive has been used by other people. So I think archive has to be living as well as recorded.
Thanks, everyone, for
putting
together
stuff.
Thanks, I'm
just adding to that point to kind of help, I guess, all the issue. I've done a lot, I work on the ground, I guess, with homeless, refugees and asylum seekers. I think one of the things I really realised with colleagues who, I'm the only one in my office with a degree, I haven't heard the word archival since I was at uni myself. So it's been really interesting to think how many stories I hear each day, how actually I put together case studies for funding for a charity rather than actually having any case studies to use to impact, on mapping out the history, as we've spoken about today. And I was talking to my group earlier about how I didn't really think of that. We've got cabinets in our offices, as have tiny organisations on the ground, stories never get shared. And working with the guy at the moment, who runs, if anyone wants to check out the blog, it's called South London Stories, and he works over like a kind of 5 to 10 year gap with people and the organisation to make sure the individual doesn't kind of experience any trauma by retelling their story. And it's kind of a collaborative project, and it's great just to hear about the projects going on around. There's so much going on, sometimes you just don't know what's out there. I think about going back and trying to educate out smaller organisations that don't think about needing to archive on work, because actually telling stories is so important. And just like you're saying, when you're doing casework and just trying to get someone, you know, out of attention, you don't really think about how you need to tell a story to impact on others. So yeah, thanks for sharing.
And just to say, actually, a lot of the records in the GPO, some of them are literally files that friends have picked up from those organisations.
Yes.
Which is why there's like 12,000 of them. But like, yeah, you should definitely get in touch with an archive that's got shared hands with you to look after it, if you can.
Yeah, my name's Crystal, and I've worked with that Israel Action Project, which is one of the groups that works closely with All African Women's Group as a collective group called Women Against Deportation Team. We're thinking about a better name, but for now that's our name. And one of the things we've done over the last decade, and longer in fact, is to really document what's going on inside the Ardsmuth, the removal centre, to make sure that women's protests, which have been many and varied over that decade, are really out in the public domain. We've sort of made sure that as often as possible we can get their voices into the media. And this dossier does, you know, does really show that history. And I think it's really important that we get the voices, particularly women, because it is so hidden what happens to women in general in our society, but in particular inside the detention centre, where the vulnerabilities is include being at the beck and call of the guards, because that was quite a major impact that it had to really highlight the sexual abuse, which had been going on since 2005, but really came to the fore in 2014. And there have been whistleblowers in the staff, as well as the women themselves, taking direct action. And that kind of direct action is absolutely essential, as Anissa said, to many, many women getting out. So, you know, we welcome all support for the activities of the organising. We've been centrally involved in the teachings, and this has been a wonderful way of really bringing people together, organisations and individuals who really do want to do this work of organising for the World Without Borders that we're going for. Thank you.
Sometimes those two movements have crossed, like the Jimmy Mbenga, they come together, but it's like that is a connection that needs to be built in a more ongoing way, that all those killers have to be brought to justice.
Yeah.
And so far, no one has. You know, as far as I know, nobody's been prosecuted for those deaths. And we attended the inquest for Jimmy Mbenga, and then when the G4S guards were put on trial, some of us were going to court every day, and the trial was just dripping with racism. I mean, it was just unbelievable. But it, you know, the movement wasn't there. And I think having, you know, as Anissa described, you know, filling the court with the movement, and, you know, we showed the Mangrove Nine film about a week ago, and one of the striking things is when you have that massive movement, when you fill the courts, when people are outside, it makes a huge difference to what you can achieve. So I feel like that's a kind of a lesson we can take from this film. We've got to build those connections. And black communities have always been criminalized. And the day of the Stansted 15 trial, they deported about 30 people to the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And they say, oh, he's a serious criminal, blah, blah, blah. And they try to put off people from supporting. They put a criminal tag on you when we know that, you know, people of color are 3 times more likely to go to prison. We're 17 times more likely to be stopped and searched. I mean, there's a whole set of racism that means we're more likely to get a prison sentence and therefore more likely to lose our right to stay. But I feel like all these are issues that we have to tackle and bring to the forefront and really stand up and call the NGOs to account. Because on one hand, we want to document, we want to archive our history, but that has to be led by the people who are at the cutting edge of it. Because otherwise it's just there, it's just a piece of paper, it's just an archive. Unless we're actually winning, the archives don't help us.
Yeah. 23rd of February.
This is a
community archival workshops. The first one is how to build your own archive, and we're going to be looking at all the things you mentioned before. The 30th of March, we'll be looking at all the digital and legal questions. And then in April, on the 27th, we'll be looking at more, I guess, research and activist-y questions. So I hope to see all of you there. And if there's any other, if there are any other kind of skills that you want to build up that we haven't included, do let us know and we'll find people you can include in the sessions.
Can we make one, sorry, this has just come to my head, one last point. At the moment, I'm working with people in France, who have organised around their sin custodies, which have affected black and Arab people there. And in France, there is something called the, I don't know if anyone's been to it, it's the Museum of Immigration. Yeah? We don't have a Museum of Immigration here, as far as I know. We do have a Museum of Slavery.
Mm. Well, it's a Museum of Migration.
Oh, is
yeah.
it?
Where is
it? Yeah. But I'm talking about a state. I'm talking about a state organisation. Much as I hate the state, I think they have a responsibility to actually document the history of the nation. And I think something like that might be a good thing to push for groups.
There is an immigration museum project happening.
Oh, is it?
Build funds.
Okay, good.
They have a small space at the moment, but they are planning to make it.
Good. So I think we need somewhere for all these things, copies of these archives to be held.
I think we better make sure we're getting into what the ones that are that do exist.
Yeah, exactly.
One thing I just wanted to put together in relation to what you made about Julie Mavenga is really important to me, because it's the same guy that defended the guards for Julie Mavenga is the one who prosecuted the Stans for 15.
No, he prosecuted the guards. He was the prosecutor for the guards.
Sorry, you're right. He was the prosecutor for the guards, but they didn't get sentenced because he was that kind of prosecutor for the guards. But he was the same guy who had a go at you. So we know that the whole system is stacked in the way it's stacked. Mm. And that's another reason to come together.
Mm. Also, that slavery museum, the one in Liverpool,
yes.
is the Parliament.
We just
went there.
Yeah,
you know, that doesn't represent on struggle. So we don't want that it's like a gravy train. People set up these museums and it goes along and it doesn't represent anything we want.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Haiti, who were the first to end slavery,
yeah.
they have one tiny little panel, and then there's a whole panel of a whole set of people of colour who are stabs. You know, it's just infuriating. So we don't want to go down that road where there's this great big monstrous museums and so on, but are completely misrepresenting the grassroots movement, and the fact that nobody's been prosecuted for these killings is an absolute scandal, and I think that has to be a priority. These people have to pay for the crimes that they've committed.
That's right.
I think Al from ND Communications wants to talk about the actions happening next week.
Just very quickly, in the immediate, Monday, midday, in front of the Home Office, putting the Home Office on trial for the third, fourth, fifth time, who knows, the tribunal last November, that was the one that was shown there. Please come down, it's going to be a lot of us who have been here, giving testimonies and also showing beauty of the world that we wish to see without borders. It is a rigged trial, we are corrupt, we are going to find them guilty no matter what. We're going to find them guilty of murder, violence, but also being complicit with the whole neo-colonial regime globally. Sentence them to a week of action, so there's going to be actions all throughout next week. The public ones that are announced are Wednesday 8 a.m, which is the one at London Bridge, can someone correct me?
Marsham Street.
That's Marsham Street, is it? So blockading the Home Office itself on Marsham Street, London Centre. And then Friday is Beckett House from midday to 3 p.m, which is another Home Office reporting centre in London Bridge. So those are the public actions. Do your own
actions.
Or do social media actions. And obviously going forward, we all need to feel more confident in taking forms of action. As May was saying, there's so many different forms you can. So maybe contact any of the groups that have been here today to offer your capacity and your support, or invite more teachers in your organisations or your workplace or your university or your living room, I don't know. But there's so many opportunities that for next week, if people can really turn up in force and bring their friends, anyone can feel safe or able to blockade and say we won't be cowed.
Yeah.
Thank you everyone for coming. Please take a look at all of the different organisations who've been here, All African Women's Group, SOAS, Detainee Support, End Deportations, the GLC Story, check them out. There's loads and loads of information and resources available on all of those different sites.
And I think as I said, we'll send out an email to everyone. Hope you've got all your emails to the Eventbrite. And we will create a particular spot on our website which has all of the stuff that's been talked about today. There's been a lot of content. I hope that you found it helpful, interesting. It sparked some ideas for you. Thanks for coming.
Thanks, Laura.
Oh, absolutely.